Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:06 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is April 3rd. Well, there was fireworks out of the oil market today. OPEC over the weekend announced that they were going to cut production by 1.16 million barrels a day. So oil prices jumped by $5, gapped higher. My short was closed out immediately on the open. So that was unfortunate. Now it's testing the region of the succession of lower rally highs that's been in place for a year. If we get upside follow through in the oil price over the course of the next week, that will break the downtrend. And then we're going to be in a rather interesting scenario because it's going to remind everybody of the conditions we had between 2011 and 2014 when Brent crude basically ranged for 3 years between about $90 and $120. In many respects, that was the ideal environment for OPEC. It was the higher for longer period for oil prices, and that allowed them to balance their budgets. And with rising populations, lower taxes, subsidies for oil, then they absolutely do need to have the higher oil price. So when price gets down now to $80, we're seeing substantive action by OPEC, led by Saudi Arabia, to curtail supply. This is a failed downside break below the 1,000-day moving average. So it's clearly evidence of support coming back in the region of the long-term trend mean. But this is also indicative of a potentially higher for longer price environment, not so much because there is a shortage, but because there is intentional policy underway to curtail supply. What I found especially interesting today was natural gas, because it was not in positive territory. So natural gas prices have been under really quite profound pressure, and we're down an extra 10 cents in here today. Now, I think it's important to also look at the individual contracts because natural gas trades on monthly contracts and there have been significant gaps. Now, if when we look at the May contract, it's bouncing here from the $2 level again. And this is, I think, an interesting level. Are we going to see it substantially below here? I think it's unlikely. But I would like to see an upward dynamic before jumping back in on this one. Then it's also, I think, rather interesting that we have Glencore attempting to buy Teck Resources. And when we look at what's been happening in the coal market, well, the Newcastle coal future has collapsed over the last 6 months and then rebounded last week and then followed through on the upside in here today, up over 10%. So this is very emphatic evidence of support coming back in at a substantially higher level than what preceded this big breakout in 2020 and 2021. Now, Teck Resources, they basically said that they want to split their company up and they were going to ensure that they could meet their environmental objectives by basically selling off their coal assets, and that they were still going to have royalties from those coal assets that would help them to increase their copper production. Well, Glencore has decided that they want to own that. They want to buy Teck Resources because they have the one of the better production growth trajectories within the copper sector. And then Glencore is not particularly worried about having a lot of exposure to coal either. In fact, they were one of the only major industrial metal miners that did not hive off their coal production facilities, even though they're not investing in increasing the size of those operations. The purchase of Teck Resources would obviously do that. Now, Teck shot it down, the price went up. Glencore price went down. And that basically signals that investors want to see Glencore buying Teck Resources, and Teck Resources investors want a better price that basically ensures that Glencore will sweeten the deal. But Glencore is trading below its 200-day moving average. Now, it has bounced from around the 400p level, but it really is essential that it hold that level. Now, there's obviously the potential that copper is going to be the desirable metal in any evolving bull market. And copper prices were a bit softer in here today. So coming back down to test this psychological $4 level. Now, as we think about what's likely here, well, oil prices are jumping higher. And factory activity in China, in much of Asia, in Europe and the USA is rolling over. The only place where factory activity is surprising on the upside is India. But India generally tends to march to its own beat and isn't particularly well reflecting what's going on in the global economy. So, what was, I think, particularly interesting here is that copper has been going, there's been trending higher in a calm manner. It hasn't gone up a lot, but it has been rising. And that's reflective of the bet that there's going to be a big jump in demand because of regulation. Now, I think it's most particularly relevant to think about regulation versus globalization. When we think about the fact that the carbon emissions market did not exist 20 years ago, now the price is approaching the 100 euro level again. Now, this market would not exist were it not for regulations and government interference in free markets and creating artificial incentives to invest in renewable energy and to try to attempt to produce or emit fewer emissions by every type of industrial operation. Well, the entire bull case for copper rests on the supposition that regulation alone will create a secular bull market in the development of renewable energy assets. And it might. But it's a very odd situation that the big bet for a secular bull market and the solar sector is steady, but not really firing on all cylinders. And the wind sector is steady, but hasn't quite yet broken the downtrend. And I think this is indicative of that we are betting that there's going to be a massive bull market in renewable energy and copper demand by introducing inefficiencies into the global economy. And that, to me, does not make nearly as much sense as the bull case that we had in the last decade, which was the industrialization of China and rising living standards for billions of people. So that, I think, is there's obviously a mismatch in terms of expectations. So I think when we think about global economic growth and introducing more inefficiencies, well, then that suggests that growth will not be as impressive in future. And that's something that we need to factor into how we think about the potential for copper demand growth going forward. Now, with oil popping on the upside, it also brings back to the fore the very real consideration that oil's a tax on consumption. And when we think then about how did all of this play out in 2007 and 8? Well, we had a phenomenal bull market in commodities, and then it really accelerated in 2006 and 7. This is the BHP chart. Now, we have not had the same kind of acceleration on this occasion, but BHP is certainly bouncing and has had the succession of higher reaction lows for nearly 3 years already. Now, the Big question then, of course, is are we going to continue to see appetite for M&A activity grow? Because we certainly had clear evidence of enthusiasm for M&A activity right at close to the peak the last time round in 2007, where Rio Tinto bought Alcan. So that was a massive purchase, cost a fortune, and then subsequently aluminium prices cratered, and Rio Tinto dropped from around 5,000 to 1,000 in the space of about 6 months. Now it's had this range that's been forming for the last 2 years, and it's towards the lower side of the range. Now, my fear here is that the time when miners are most enthusiastic about the upside potential of their businesses is usually when M&A activity increases and you get really big mergers. But on top of that, it usually happens after a period of strong economic growth and has historically tended to coincide with times when liquidity is in fact starting to be curtailed. And that's exactly what we have right now. So what we're also starting to see here is that 10-year yields are starting to contract. So the 10-year is down now to 3.4%. That's 4.1%. Now, when we zoom out and look at this on a weekly chart, we can see that it hasn't quite yet broken through the 200-day moving average, and it's hovering here in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. But we do have a succession of lower rally highs, and I think that it is more likely than not that while higher oil prices in the short term will contribute to inflation, higher oil prices over the medium term contribute to deflation because it factors through into considerations for purchasing of everything and pushes prices up and forces people to substitute. And that's generally what happens in bull markets. So if we're going to see lower bond yields overall, then that's basically pricing in lower growth. Now, the Nasdaq was in negative territory today, not in a dynamic manner, but it is down. Now, it's well off the low. So now the question is, are we going to see enthusiasm in the near term for technology because yields are coming down, or are we going to see weakness in response to this threat of less demand? One thing that was very clear, though, was that the Dow Jones was in positive territory and jumping back up towards the upper side of its range. So it looks like a failed downside break. And of course, this is more of a quality index rather than a growth index. So it's around this time in the cycle where quality tends to do well, but that also implies that we are at the top of the interest rate hiking cycle. And usually it's when you get the first interest rate cut is when some of the biggest selling pressure starts to emerge. Now, when we then think about what this means for the wider economy, well, gold was in positive territory today, up $15. This has been a shallow and orderly consolidation, mostly below the 2000 level. And I think that the odds are improving that gold is going to break on the upside. And if it breaks on the upside, I think we should be then remembering that rangers are explosions waiting to happen. And it has been ranging for 2 years already. So when it breaks out, it could rally really quite impressively. And with bond yields coming back down and the potential that we're at the top of the interest rate hiking cycle, well, then that's negative for the dollar too. So the dollar continues to roll over. But a weaker dollar then should be a tailwind for assets everywhere else. And the Euro Stoxx index was a little softer today, but has continued to bounce from the region of the 200-day moving average. UK valuations are among the lowest in the developed world, so the pound is also now strengthening and is right in the region of the upper side of its range. If we see further weakness in the dollar, there is a good chance that the pound will continue to improve, and this looks like a failed downside break below 120. So there's certainly the potential here that a weaker dollar is going to create a much more benign environment overall for overseas assets. And of course, then that is also going to beg the question about what happens with the Nikkei and the yen. So the Nikkei continues to hold support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And there are big questions about the sustainability of the quantitative easing program in Japan, but inflationary pressures are moderating. So then the sustainability is not nearly as troubling right now. And the yen was a little steadier in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. But it has not yet pushed up through the 200-day moving average. And what this also helps to suggest is that the dollar is among the weakest currencies in the world. So it's going to make everywhere else look more attractive. And I think that is going to be most particularly true for countries that benefit from either reshoring or nearshoring or friendshoring. Mexico is among those, and the iShares ETF continues to hold the breakout. And the Indonesian market is coming up to the upper side of this range that's been forming now for 7 years, and a sustained move above 25 would confirm a return to demand dominance. Then, of course, with factory activity doing better in India, then there is the potential that India will, I think, perhaps more accurately, remain uncorrelated with much of the rest of the world. So the Nifty index has rebounded over the last couple of days. It has not yet quite broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but certainly it is improving. Now, Vietnam is, well, I think, was the go-to market for offshoring from China for most of the last decade. And the index pulled back sharply in 2022, but it is now demonstrating some support. And there will certainly be a lot more interest in emerging markets as the dollar declines. And if the Federal Reserve actually does stop raising rates in an environment where inflation is still quite high, well, then that is going to prolong the inflationary problem, and it is going to favor countries that have experience dealing with inflation and those that are willing to do something about it. And that's pretty much all in the emerging markets. And I think Brazil is going to be the poster child for that. They've been most aggressive in raising interest rates, and inflation, it has come down quite quickly. So now the bigger question is, when are they going to start cutting rates? And I think that will be a lead indicator for what we can anticipate from everywhere else. But we're not quite there yet. There's still the potential that we could see additional upside in stock markets as yields come down. But tight global liquidity will eventually lead to lower demand. Higher energy prices will quickly lower demand. We're more likely to have a deflationary shock over the next year than we are to have another inflationary shock. And I think that will be the catalyst then for a significant reset in terms of monetary and fiscal policy, which will set us up for the next medium-term bull market. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.